to the third edition of the Damn Art Majors podcast. I am Adam, your host of the evening. Joined with me is Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello there.
And Dutters.
Hello.
And we are back. Just wanted to get some stuff out of the way here. Thank you everyone for digging on the first two episodes. We did do the first two episodes one right after the other, and it became a little more intoxicated around episode two.
A lot more.
So we're back after that, and we're all a little more clear-headed. Thanks to Oak City Hustle, who's broadcasting this. I also want to give a shout-out to Phil Wilson, who...
Phil.
Did...
Thanks, Phil.
The intro music for not only this podcast, but also the No Big Two comic review. Check them out at facebook.com/myselfandiband. So, yeah. How you guys been? Been a good week?
Yeah.
Oh, we like to... It's
totally been a good week.
Good.
Good 2 weeks, actually.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're going to start this as we like to start every podcast with what you drinking. What you got?
Who goes first?
I'll go first. I am drinking a Guinness draft, getting ready for the holiday that is coming up here shortly. March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. Yeah, Aaron?
I'm drinking a collaborative beer between Cigar City Brewing and New Belgium, the makers of Fat Tire. It's called the Lips of Faith series.
It sounds like a sexy nun.
It tastes like a sexy nun. it's supposedly an ale brewed with Anaheim and Marish cherry chilies.
That sounds tasty.
It's kind of spicy, actually.
Hmm.
Who knew?
Like a sexy nun.
Yep.
I am drinking my first, well, not my first, well, my first homebrew. I did homebrewing a couple of weeks ago, and out of the batch of 16, I think 5 of them actually came out carbonated and correct. I had to pour a lot out. But
what's the name of this beer?
What did Sarah call it? She called it?
She called it Adam's Brew.
Adam's Brew by Adam Incorporated or something?
Yes, that's...
I don't think I really want my name associated with it. It's actually not bad. It's the Mr. Beer American light beer, and it's very honey flavored and a little citrus. It actually, to me, tastes more like Blue Moon than anything.
Yeah, it's got a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah, I might have done too much sugar.
You might have.
A little bit. What are you going to do?
It tastes actually like mead, which is a brew from mine.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the experience. Even though,
can you do it again?
I think I will. I think I'm going to maybe try to refine my skills a little bit better.
Less sugar.
Less sugar. Maybe not Mr. Beer. Maybe actually try my own. For now, I don't even know if it's very alcoholic at all. I had one the other day, and I really don't think there's hardly any alcohol in it. I made my own O'Doul's.
Yeah, the amount of sugar that's still in there, I'd... Maybe it's 1.5%.
Yeah.
So it's the Coors Light of homebrew.
Pretty much. I like it.
What you can do is you can take it, you can can it, and then shotgun it.
There you go. So I had a pretty good week. Last week, I was at a marketing and advertising conference put on in Raleigh. My company was there filming the event, and I got tickets for it so that I could sit in on the lectures and network and meet people. So while I was there, I saw one presenter named Christina Beard. She is a designer and an author of a book called Critiqued. And
how do you spell that?
C-R-I-T-I-Q-U-E-D. Critiqued.
All right, cool.
We have outlines this week. It's written.
Yeah. We didn't get to introduce a guest because they got sick.
They were nauseous. They had a really bad gyro.
They listened to the first two episodes.
Yeah, maybe.
The diarrhea.
So, Christina Beard had done a very interesting master's thesis and made it into a book. She had come up with the concept of doing a poster for a very basic idea of wash your hands. The first poster was a bunch of hands kind of making a faucet kind of shape thing. And it's blue and green. And so she took the first poster to her professor, and the professor critiqued the poster and gave her a bunch of ideas on what she could do differently, whether it be text, whether it be the image, whether it be, you know, kind of the subtle meanings of the poster. So she then made a second poster. So then she took poster B to a second designer who then gave their own critique of poster B. And based on that critique, you know, that the second designer was really big into typography and wanted a really clean typography. So she created poster C. Then she took poster C to designer three, and so forth and so forth. So she was explaining that this experiment of hers took her through dozens of states, even two countries. And by the end of it, she ended up with over 20 different interviews that she filmed, 20 different opinions, and over 20 different posters. And what was really cool about the book is that you can see the evolution of the posters from her original concept to the end of the experiment. And some people who gave critiques just changed a few things. The placement of the letters, some of the colors. Others changed the whole entire concept while still referring to wash your hands. And I thought it was a really interesting idea. I guess my question to you guys is, how do you feel about it? You know, is it too many cooks in the kitchen? Is it awesome to open up the idea to get to an audience and have everybody's opinions kind of evolve the piece?
It sounds to me like it went from her making a better piece of work for herself as an artist to, or as a designer, to her doing a study on how different people critique
right.
a piece of work. I think it became a much bigger piece than just, this is my concept poster. How would you fix it? To, let's take a look at how all these different people with a lot of say and pull would interpret this concept, would work with this base design that I've come up with. I don't remember what your main point, what your main question for me was.
Oh, just like, I don't know, how you feel about the idea. Like, would this be something you would try, or?
I mean,
Or do you believe that, like, where would you draw the line? Like, where would you say, like, all these opinions are great, but in the end, I have to be the one who filters all these designs to decide which is going to work?
When it doesn't look like my work anymore mm-hmm. is when obviously when I'm going to stop. When it gets to the point where other people are stepping in and they're trying to make it their own piece, which is actually one of the reasons why when I make a piece of work, I like getting the opinion of people that aren't sculptors.
Right.
That don't work three-dimensionally. In some cases, they might have an art background. In other cases, they don't. They just, you know, they like what they like. They don't have any education behind their visual, what they prefer to look at. And just get their opinion on it. And I think in some cases, they point out things that I don't recognize, that I don't think to look for, and I think that helps a little bit. And the things that they like, they point out, and if it's something I wasn't going for, I wasn't pushing, I could maybe push it a little bit farther to get that point across. But I think, because I know just from my own experience, getting people who work in the same medium as I do, they can start to want to put their own, what they like,
sure.
in a piece of work into my work, and I have to sit there and it almost becomes more of an argument of whose work do you like better. Well, of course, you're going to like your own work.
Right. So let me pose this to you, Aaron. If she had done the experiment and instead of using 20 plus designers who all have their own style and their own way of thinking and they know based on their experience what works and what doesn't work, and say uses 20 restaurant owners who would hang the poster or 20 people on the street, do those people's opinions carry as much weight, in your opinion, as, say, a designer?
I would say their opinion is totally different because to them, it's a matter of would they buy it or not. They are consumers,
right?
In that scenario, designers look at all different aspects of what's going on. They look for subliminal. They look for eye-catchiness. They look for a great number of factors that the majority of people on the street wouldn't even consider.
Right.
So I wouldn't say that it holds the same weight. I would say that it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
In response to the first question that you posed about would that work for me or Richard?
Right.
For me, it wouldn't work. Like, I agree with what he said, and I understand where he's coming from when he says it would be pretty useful to do that. But for me, I would, if I'm being commissioned for something, regardless of if it's 2D or 3D, I want to have complete creative control over it. Because it just gets confusing when you have too many ideas, as opposed to when you're given the assignment, you sit down, you ponder three or four, maybe possible scenarios of what your end product is going to be. You sit down, you sketch them out. This one works in this way. This one doesn't. You show those to the designer or the person doing the commissioning it. They give you the go ahead for one particular one, and you flush it out there. There might be some changes after that, but when you go from,
I agree with, if you're doing a commission, the there's only two people that matter in a commission. The person who's paying for it and the person making it. Like that.
Oh, I think there's only one person who matters. This is the person who's paying for it.
And well, I mean, hopefully if someone's commissioning a piece of artwork, they care, they like what that artist does, but they want to collaborate. And so that to me is what a good commission is. Bad commission is when someone just walks up to you and goes, make this for me. And in that case, then you're running a business and you're producing just work. So in that respect, then yeah, getting other people's opinion would be useless. It just would get in my way. But when I'm making my own personal work that's going to go, that I might try to get into shows and stuff, the person I'm trying to please is going to be me, but at the same time, it's going to serve a wider audience.
Right.
So I like to get a wider opinion. That doesn't mean I'm going to take it. I mean, half the time I'll finish a piece, show a couple people, and they might say something, and then I'll just look at them and go, well, that's nice. That I appreciate that. And then as soon as they leave the room, that's never going to happen.
I recognize that you feel that way. But yeah.
I think it would look awesome if it had, like, flames on it. I want you to go spray paint flames. Oh, that's a great idea.
That's a really good idea.
I agree with you, though. It's the collaboration aspect of if you're given a commission, the possibilities to collaborate with the commissioner are always, you know, paramount. Like, that's right. That could be the most fun part of the assignment. You could struggle for 80% of it, and then for that 10%, that's what you'll remember, is the fact that you locked minds with somebody, agreed on a vision, and made it happen. But yeah, it all boils down to who's got the money.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Gotta keep the lights on.
Anyway, the book is, once again, called Critiqued by Christina Beard.
Maybe we could get her in here.
Maybe we could. It would be awesome if, you know what, maybe I will tweet her and maybe she will respond, and that would be kind of neat.
I'm interested. Yeah. I'm going to check out that book, definitely.
All right. There you go, Miss Christina Beard. Didn't cost you a shiny red cent. Anyway, what do we got? I heard a little rumor that there was some buzz
about what?
About some facts. Not just any facts.
Are you talking about the correction that I need to make from?
You do. You have a
one. Yeah. So episode one, I had a little segment called Spider Facts.
Oh, that's what everyone's here for, man.
Yes.
Everyone listening now has just been like, all right, those other two guys can just shut the fuck up. I need the sultry voice of Aaron talking about nothing but spiders to soothe me right now.
Well, I mean, they need to be woken up from that conversation we just had, and what better way to do it than with our eight-legged friends?
Well, some of the best feedback that we got was apparently about Spider Facts, which, thank you. I'm not an entomologist, and this is a podcast about art. So anyway, onward to the correction that I need to make. Because as I said, I'm not an entomologist. I went to school for drawing and shit. I said one of the facts that I said was that a primary component of the jumping spider's diet was pollen. In fact, I meant nectar. I totally misspoke. I was thinking pollen because it's a ground mobile creature. So yeah, they totally eat nectar. And what's really interesting about that is in some situations, it becomes like a symbiotic relationship with the plant, where the plant produces nectar, the spider eats it, and then goes and preys upon any sort of pests and stuff that are on the plant. So that's that. They're not bees.
Yeah.
Do you want me to...
Were people confused that spiders... Did they think spiders and bees were...
No, nobody said anything, but I listened to the podcast and I realized, wow, that's totally wrong.
Aaron listened to the podcast, Stutters. Aaron listened.
Yeah, no, I admitted to the guys here that I probably will never listen to these podcasts unless they edit my voice out for a take just for me. Because I can, I hear my voice come out over speakers and I leave a room.
Well, you said you heard the intro.
I listened to the intro music.
Good job, Phil.
Because I wanted to hear what Phil was putting out there, and then I heard Adam's voice come on. I was like, all right. And I heard Aaron's voice, and I was like, cool. And then I heard me, and I was like, yep, gotta leave the room now. I'm done. I'm done with the shit.
Did you want me to introduce another set of spider facts, or we want to hold on?
I don't, but the audience does.
Okay. All right. I'll make these really short this time.
I'm not an entomologist.
Not an entomologist. I'm also not a very good orator. But
a what?
Orator. Speaker of scientific facts. Okay. The first fact. Once again, these three facts are about jumping spiders. In future episodes, I will move on and talk about some other
type of running spiders.
Yes. The first fact is about silk. Like all spiders, they produce silk. They have very specialized organs to do so. With jumping spiders, because they don't create webs, they use silk much in the way that Spider-Man uses silk. Not shooting...
Thwip.
Not thwipping and... not shooting to get from one place to another, but they use it actually as a safety line. Any given instance that they jump, there is a very minuscule single strand of silk tied from their jumping point, so that if they miss or if they get caught in a wind gust, they don't, go flying off into oblivion. They can, go back to their original starting position.
So basically, what you're telling me is jumping spiders are hyper-cautious.
Yes, yeah. They apparently seem to be self-aware that they're pretty lightweight. The other thing that they use silk for is they create habitats for themselves. The only instance that I could find where this was described, they used the phrase pup tent, which I thought was kind of funny because what the hell?
Okay. What is pup tent?
Pup tent.
Like a tent full of puppies?
Yeah, it's like a, I guess it's a old phrase.
It sounds adorable.
But they create kind of a shelter for themselves. It's like a thickly woven awning that they sleep under. They're very tightly compacted in there so that it actually doesn't gather any wind or anything. But they use it for instances of bad weather. Sometimes you'll actually see them on the bottom, the underside of leaves. You'll see them like nestled in the crotch of certain plants and stuff. They also lay their eggs in there. So... that's that. Second fact is one that I can't really comprehend. Richard's showing me pictures of pup tents.
Yeah. It's basically the standard military triangle tent that you just throw up really quick. The ones you could buy in the back of the American Boy Scout magazine.
But it's not a lean-to. That's a difference.
Yeah. No, this is two poles with a piece of canvas and a flap in the front and the back. If you feel like putting a flap in the front and the back. I'm not saying the spiders are making these. I mean, I'm sure that theirs has a flap in the front. Who knows?
But they are earning a badge for these.
That'd be awesome.
Their Spider-Bro badge.
Yeah, it dawned on me that we're not doodling as we said we would this one. Oh, well.
That's okay. We can doodle after
that. We'll doodle in the next episode.
We got to doodle
a pup actually. Tent.
Dude. And the origin of calling guys dude.
So it was on Jeopardy?
Yeah, it was on Jeopardy. That's right. I'm just going to keep on bringing up really, like, shows that a 60-year-old retiree watched, like, NPR. What is wrong with me?
You need to do dude facts. Aaron's got spiders covered. Mm. You tell people things about dudes. Like, what a dude in the bathtub
Richard's thinking right now. That requires research.
I mean,
dude facts.
What a guy in the bathtub?
Yeah, we talked
He's
about
probably
it.
Probably cleaning the bathtub because his woman told him
there
to.
There you go. Oh, we talked
guys
about
don't
we
take baths.
We actually talked about an episode 2, but it got cut. Why guys don't take baths?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We should save that for another episode cuz it's actually a really funny.
We could develop this into something, dude.
Why,
facts.
Why guys don't take baths?
Yeah.
It's a waste of time.
It is.
There's something more intimate than that.
Guys, you really don't remember.
Guys
you
can masturbate standing up?
It's the floating penis scenario.
God, I don't remember this at all.
Wow,
dude. How drunk was I?
I have it on tape. You totally went on a whole thing about, you know, why men don't take baths.
Oh, yeah, our dick floats and it pulls our head underwater.
I think I just spit directly into the microphone. That's probably a nice, like...
Oh, God.
Okay.
Right. What's the name of the guy who's got to edit this stuff?
Oh, right now it's me.
Well, I don't feel bad.
But ultimately it's Joe. Who? Yeah,
Joe
cleans it up. He cleans up the audio, and then I clean up the content, if that makes sense. Yeah.
All right, spider facts.
Spider fact number 2. This is one of the more scientific, interesting ones. They have an internal hydraulic system that they use to jump. And I could find no other analogy of how to describe it other than like a piston, like a pressure piston. They don't have blood. What they have is a weird
hydraulic fluid.
It's like hydraulic fluid, but it's actually called hemolymph.
Doesn't hemo?
We have hemoglobin.
Hemo means blood, but it's not actually blood. I don't even know that spiders have white and red blood cells. This is something that a lot of insects have, I think. But they use this hemolymph as like a liquid to pressurize, and they don't have large jumping legs like grasshoppers do.
Right.
It's a very specialized feature for insects to have that leg style. What jumping spiders do is they pressurize the back portion of their body and then leap using that sudden release of hemolymph. Kind of like if you were to clench your fist and then tighten up your forearm and then release your, like, open your palm.
Right.
You can feel that relaxation travel throughout your arm. That fact...
Like, once again, Spider-Man.
That fact kind of segues into the next one, which is... At the end of this, I'm going to say something kind of frightening that I realized. I also saw something about this on Reddit the other day, but I couldn't find it to reference.
You
didn't
tell me
time.
They're poisonous and they will kill
no,
me?
No. They
totally tried sparring with one the other day. Yes, I did. It was in the shop, and I was like, I saw it, and I was like, you know what? I'll just because I was sweeping up the sawdust, and I was like, I'm just gonna sweep him up and ignore him. I was like, no, wait, wait. I remember my spider facts. I'm gonna try sparring with this little thing. And it was a jumpy. It was weird looking ones, you know, the little jumpy ones, little tiny little thing. And I get down there, and I start poking at him. Fucker just jumped away. He's like, no, I'm out, man.
He wasn't having it.
He was not having it. But I just wanted to say, I did actually put my spider facts to use.
Try it again. You'll be surprised.
Right. I hope we're helping people and curing them of arachnophobia and, you know, embracing the symbiotic relationship between man and spider.
If I've got spiders in the shop and they're up in the corners and stuff, I'd leave them there. Because the way I look at it, they're killing any mosquito that gets into my shop. And they aren't doing me any harm. Mm-hmm. Now, if they just happen to be on me or in my near vicinity and I happen to be using the restroom, they're dead.
Agreed.
One of the best things I ever heard of in regards to arachnophobia is it's not the spider that you're afraid of. It's the thought of the spider. The fact that it's such an alien creature and you think it has nothing but malcontent for you. When in fact they want nothing other than to like run the fuck away from you because you're huge.
Isn't there some kind of like statistic about like how many spiders the average person eats in their sleep?
Yeah, it's usually exaggerated.
Yeah, I heard it was something like 5 a year or something like that.
You definitely inhale bugs while you sleep. They are attracted to the moisture around your face.
I think it's weird when I wake up
have
with
fun
a spider.
Sleeping people.
Yeah, right? Is this the frightening thing?
This is extra protein. It's just extra protein.
I think it's weird when I wake up with a spider bite and I'm like, just the sheer vulnerability. And
vulnerability.
I feel vulnerable. The thing, like,
that's what you said. Boner.
I did not say boner. I could check the tape on that. Vulnerability and like the victimization. I feel because I'm just sleeping, and this spider decides to crawl on me, and you know.
Yeah, but but then you take a broom to the little web in the corner.
I
and they're just sleeping.
Yeah.
All
right.
Like, they don't crush our entire lives with one fell swoop.
I mean, I usually have to like coddle myself in a cold shower afterwards.
God, I'm defending a spider. Anyway. What's Spider Factory?
What's number three?
Okay, this actually ties into
these guys really like spiders. God,
this concept of a spider sleeping. So spiders, because they don't have blood, they have this liquid called hemolymph. They don't have the same type of lungs that we do.
Right.
They don't rely on the same type of aspiration. They have what are called book lungs, which, if you can imagine a long, narrow strip of paper, say 4 feet long, and you fold that 600 times, you're going to have a really thick, you know, like, wad of paper.
Right.
Kind of like an air filter?
Yeah. Very similar to an air filter, but they're highly compacted. Folded sheets that are like perforated sheets, and two of those, you know, however many actually compose their lungs, and they're called book lungs. Hence, you could open it up. And what that enables them to do is diffuse oxygen in such a way that they have almost limitless amounts of energy. Like, they don't tire because they don't.
So you're saying they don't sleep?
Basically.
They don't sleep. I sleep.
Well, no, they absolutely rest. They go through periods of dormancy that could be sleep. But
they nap.
That's not the scary aspect. The fact of the matter is that they don't tire. When they're active, say one is running away from you full tilt as fast as it can move, it will continue at that speed until it finds cover, normally. Unless you catch up with it. So imagine if a spider was your size and it was stalking you, you would never be able to outrun it. Never.
I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
And now we have the beginnings for a new horror movie. Screw it, like it freaks. We're going to do it better. We're going to make those raptors in Jurassic Park look like pansies.
I think Phil needs to do some theme music for Spider Facts.
Yeah, I do.
Just not anything copyrighted.
Phil?
I need some. Let's get some chimes in there. I really feel like it needs a little.
We need chimes. Yeah.
And then, like, but then that sound of like a rubber band that wow, that kind of. Like a more haunting. Kind of like that pluck of a rubber
composer,
band.
You're a composer, man. Like, you know what you're talking about.
I just know what I like to listen to. Not my own voice.
Chimes.
I kind of want a steel drum intro. Like a nice.
That'd movie. Be cool. Dude, if he comes back with this, it would be amazing.
Yeah.
Dunners, I noticed you have not been coughing as much as you were 2 weeks ago. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I am feeling better. Well, at least my lungs apparently are feeling better.
Good, because you were coughing an awful lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you had a lot of fun trying to deal with that.
Yeah, it was I did bring it up.
I guess I got the flu. I don't know how if I know. Got the flu, and then, of course, you know, got bronchitis while my immune system was weakened, and then walked around like, you know, the plague. It was fun. Yeah, sat in front of a mic with two other people. Probably infected him. And it's cool.
Aaron,
I think I did actually get sick after that.
Did you?
It's impossible for you to have gotten sick. It was like 2 weeks after I carried a fever.
I got sick the next week. I took off a day at work. I stayed home and watched Breaking Bad. And then I was sad.
I've never watched Breaking Bad, so.
It's really sad.
Oh, okay.
You got betteritis?
If they ever name a disease after me, they're not going to call it betteritis.
I got vulnerability.
That's not what they said.
Hold on. I'm just now reading the outline because I always do my homework.
Right.
What's this Truth or Told?
Truth Be Told is a new game that we're actually going to premiere in the next episode.
Okay. All right.
The idea.
So get ready, folks.
The idea will be three stories will be told. Only one of them is true. The other two people who are not telling the story get to ask questions before giving their guess of which story they believe is true. So Truth Be Told next week. This week we got the return of Spider Facts. So hope you enjoyed it.
I feel like they weren't as interesting this time.
I'm sure that's not up to us to decide.
I think they were better because I was ready for them. Like I was a little shocked with the Spider Facts on the first episode. I was just like, shit, this show took a heavy turn. Like we're straight up giving people like science.
Yeah, I kind of thought he'd give like one line, one sentence factoids, but no.
And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I sat here and I learned something. and I actually took it and applied it to my life. I don't know if I'm better for it, but
I don't know, man. It
the spiders
like,
might be.
It sounds like that spider played you.
I think it did. For all I know, it wasn't a jumping spider. It could have been just a brown recluse or something.
Nah, this don't actually leave and live here.
Sweet.
Hey, save it for Spider Facts 3.
I could.
Black Widows do, though.
Yes.
I've seen
Black Widows. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And they can run faster than you.
And they never stop hunting.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez.
Anybody got a tale of the art school this time around? Dutters, you got one?
Yeah.
Speaking of your chronic things that go wrong with you.
All right. Yeah, now this is an unfortunate incident. I would like to preface this with, I do follow all tool safety. I try to be aware of my surroundings and use proper ear, eye protection, gloves, things like that. But sometimes things go wrong. This is one particular case of that. This was towards the end of September.
2009?
2010.
Okay, yeah.
2010, because my senior show...
Yeah, that's right, because I had already graduated at this point.
And my senior...
I remember hearing about it, and everybody, like, freaking out, and then hearing that this happened to some dude, and then when I heard that some dude was you, I thought it was pretty awesome.
Can I describe the tool when the time comes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. You may describe the tool, because I have no doubt you'll probably do a better job describing it.
Okay, good.
But... Yeah, because it was end of September. It was 2 months before my senior show, which for those listeners that don't know, this is the basic culmination of in my case, 5 years of art school and all of my sweat and tears and eventual blood were going into getting this show together. Anyway, so I was out. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning.
It was earlier than that, dude. It was like 9.
That's what I get for being one of those people that's in the studio early.
I was still drinking my same mug of coffee from that morning.
All right. So yeah, it was definitely early, and I was working on a piece, doing some wood carving, and I was using what at the time I thought was the best tool for the job. I'll let Aaron take over here describing said tool.
Okay. Richard was using a angle grinder to carve away sections of, was it oak? White oak?
It was walnut.
Walnut. And the angle grinder, for anybody that doesn't know out there, is a it's a tool that you use with both hands. It has a disc on the end of it that rotates at 8,000 rotations per minute. And the disc that he had on there was a specific tool referred to as a Lancelot blade. There's a company called King Arthur Tools that makes an entire line of really nasty cutting implements. And one of them is the Lancelot blade. And if you ever have used a chainsaw, you know how destructive they can be when cutting something. And if you look at the blade, there's just a mass of angular teeth on there that are designed to do their damnedest to one of the hardest, most natural substances. And so the Lancelot blade is a 4.5-inch disc that has a chainsaw blade all the way around it, and it rotates at 8,000 RPMs per minute. And I'll just leave it at that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and for anyone out there who knows anything about chainsaws, the only way to get a chainsaw to really kick back is to accidentally bury the tip of a chainsaw, which is rounded at about 4.5 inches, and the chainsaw will kick back. So basically, I'm dealing with a rotating end of a chainsaw that all it really wants to do is kick back on me.
Right.
And I'm carving away at this log. It's actually a very nice section of log. But what I didn't realize was, and I was also doing something that's probably not, I would never recommend doing this. I use a completely different tool now, but I was doing an interior carving out the inside of a bowl.
Sure.
And while I was carving, I discovered a recessed knot in the wood, which was denser. And as I was doing this, the blade caught. And within a split second, I barely even remember what happened. The Lancelot and grinder were no longer in my hand, and they were buried in my apron and t-shirt.
So you had a saw.
I had a saw sticking out of my chest. Now, nothing. Now, there was, as far as I could tell, there was no injury to my chest. I didn't feel any pain, like complete, like human endorphins, like just everything kicked in to survive remote. I didn't feel anything.
What was your apron made of?
Leather.
Oh, okay.
It was like a cape sleeve.
Yeah. It was just my full leather.
Okay.
Full leather apron. probably the reason why the only injury I sustained to my stomach, my chest, is right around your diaphragm, my chest and stomach, was about 36 tiny scratches, which means the blade was able to rotate 36 times inside my leather apron before it finally bound up and stopped. And at this point, I thought that was the only injury sustained.
However,
I was wrong. Out of the corner of my eye, I see this red puddle on the ground forming. And I look over, and I see it on my forearm. And I trace the stream of red fluid up to my glove. And when I look up, and all I see is these mangled fingertips of my gloves. And I was wearing leather gloves. And then I just, it was just red. And immediately I was like, shit. And the first thing that popped in my head, I have to get my hand up. So I just stick my hand up as high as possible, turn my head around. And of course, I'm wearing a respirator because I'm carving wood. And I'm trying to yell to the only person out there working to get her attention, because I can't move because this grinder is plugged into the wall, and I can't walk over to where I've plugged it in because I'm trying to move as little as possible so I don't lose any more blood. I don't even know the damage done to my hand at this point. And I'm yelling to this person. I'm just yelling her name, trying to get her attention. Finally, I take my right hand, and this is my left hand that is bleeding. I take my right hand, pull my mask down, I just yell her name. She turns around, and of course, the only person out there working with me is afraid of the sight of blood. So she turns around, and I could see it in her eyes that all she saw was just a fountain of red everywhere. It was not that bad. There was blood, but not that much blood. But in her mind, it was bad. And I was just like, just go get Hannah, our professor. Just go get our professor. And she takes off running down the hall. At which point, I am now alone, stuck in the middle of the courtyard with a grinder stuck in my chest, plugged into a wall, and I'm just blood running down my sleeve. And I don't even know how long. I mean, I have no doubt I was out there for maybe 30 seconds. However long it took Jesse. I don't even know what happened when she went inside.
She came. I was in the studio at the opposite end of the building. Well, the opposite side of the building.
Yeah.
She came storming down the hallway and was screaming for Hannah. And she made it sound a lot worse than it was. She said something I can't really remember because immediately everyone in the studio was like, "Oh shit!" It was like a mass exodus towards where Richard was outside. She said something about you cut yourself with the Lancelot, but everybody immediately assumed that like you were headless outside or something. and I don't know if you know this or not, but our professor was having a really bad day already.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah, I know.
Hannah's becoming the silent fourth to this podcast. That'd be awesome if we get him in on this one day if he drives up.
Oh, man.
He would never do it.
No.
No?
But, anyway.
You're probably right.
So Hannah came out, and what was so funny was I saw him, and I saw his face, and I immediately saw where his eyes were looking. They were looking down. I think he was looking for my body parts.
Yeah.
Which at which point I hadn't lost any. To this day I still haven't lost any body parts. I still can count to 10.
Knock on wood.
Knock on MDF.
But yeah, so Hannah's looking around, and then he sees me, and he sees this grinder stuck in my chest, which I'm sure no one warned him about. And I'm just sitting there, you know, blood's pouring down my arm. I'm sure I'm turning white at this point, because I remember, like, this tunnel sort of closing in. Like, I'm standing up, and I'm like, I'm not going to be able to stand up much longer. And I'm still got my respirator on, and I'm just sitting there, which is really making things a lot more difficult, because when you start going into shock, you start breathing heavy, and a respirator restricts your breathing.
Yeah.
So it's just like I'm starting to hyperventilate inside this thing. I'm trying to yell to Hanno through this respirator and tell him the grinder is not, as far as I can tell, I don't feel any pain coming from my chest. I'm a little bit of throbbing from my hand. That's the amazing thing about shock. Your body just cuts off pain receptors.
Right.
And so I just tell him, and he looks at me. He's like, "Is the grinder stuck?" And I'm like, "No, just get it off of me." And in one fell swoop, the man just, grinder and apron both, just rips him off. Just throws it to the side. and walks me inside so he can sit me down. He's helping me hold. At which point, I vaguely remember some other people around me. I think someone was holding my hand up.
Yeah.
I was sitting on a stool. I just remember feeling white.
I had walked in there probably a minute or two after you had done it. I didn't want to walk in there at first because I knew there was like 20 people all over you. But when I walked in there, you had just... Somebody had taken your glove off, I think, and you had just started getting to the point where it started to hurt.
Yeah.
And it was pretty bad. Like, you were you looked like plastic.
So did you get to the hospital?
Oh yeah, no, this is the really entertaining thing. It turned out there was already a fire marshal at the art building because they were getting ready to test the alarm system. And the standard procedure when a student is injured, you know, you call 911. Standard procedure, at least in North Carolina that I'm aware of, is it's a first response system. Basically, firemen are trained in EMS and stuff like that. So there was a fire truck that got deployed, and ambulance got deployed. Like, I mean, everyone was coming in.
So the whole town just showed up.
So I pretty much had everyone just show up at the art building. And I remember the guy coming in with a pair, you know, there's a fire. I remember seeing a fire marshal, and he's got a clipboard, And he's kind of got this oh shit look on his face, like something bad's about to happen. And I'm just like, why the hell is a fire marshal? Then the guy, you know, the EMTs arrive, or EMS guys arrive, and one of them sits there, he's holding my hand up, and he pulls out a pair of scissors, like, we need to take your glove off. And I was like, okay. He's like, you don't want to look at this. I'm like, no, I want to look at this. Like, I just, I'm like, I want to see what the hell I did to myself. And oh, I got to say this
real quick. I can take it, man.
Real quick, I got to say, I absolutely appreciate everything my professor and the grad students who were there did. They absolutely did their job, like, right to a T, to make sure everything was taken care of. But anyway, yeah, this guy, he's sitting there. He's like, you don't want to look at this. And I was like, no, I need to see. I remember he cuts the glove. I look at it. I'm like, I don't want to look at it. Immediately. Cause when you see yourself, part of yourself that mangled up, I mean, the best way to describe it without being too graphic is imagine.
It's already too graphic, man.
Imagine a zipper, just the way a zipper has all those little teeth.
Yeah.
Only this is an open zipper, and it's you're on your hand. It's on your fingers. But anyway, and so they get me.
My hands hurt just from hearing that.
And they get me onto it. They have, you know, they can't let me walk. They put me on a gurney. They wrap it up and they tuck it close to my body. At which point, like, my body is kicking in, so the shock is starting to wear off because they, you know, I'm not losing as much blood. And that's when it's just pain. It's just throbbing. Coming, it is the loudest thing ever. And then suddenly, a fire alarm goes off. Just this siren, this terrible, horrific siren noise. And I'm sitting there, and all I can think is, someone just shut that damn thing off. They're wheeling me out of the building. And suddenly there's people coming down the stairwells. And just the entire building is just being let loose as I'm being wheeled into an ambulance.
Look at that guy. Is he dead? Is
that guy dead? And people are looking at me. And, you know, and the art building is a very...
They had you on a gurney.
They had me on a gurney. Yeah. And they had my hand bandaged up. And I'm just waving with my right hand, just waving it. Because I'm seeing all these people I know. And I was completely loopy. Anyway, they get me in the ambulance. They have trouble. I mean, Greenville has tons of railroads. So they're trying to stick an IV in my arm. They miss every vein because of the railroads. So I probably look like a heroin addict who tried to slice his two fingers off when I finally got me into the ER. But, I mean, I can honestly say the worst experience of my life was that day. Nearly cutting two fingers off. And the best experience of my life was that day when they gave me morphine. To anyone who's ever had morphine, it is the greatest thing ever. It is like the feeling you get after drinking like an entire bottle of tequila, but you don't feel sick. You just feel warm and happy and everything's going to be all right. And you just don't care. All stress, everything is gone. There's a really good reason it is a controlled substance.
Yes, drugs are bad. Drugs are bad, kids.
So today, all 10 fingers, all 10 toes?
All 10 fingers, all 10 toes. I have reason, like, looking at my, if you weren't to pay that close attention, you wouldn't even be able to tell. I got to hand it to them. The people that stitched me up did a hell of a job. I had to go through physical therapy. Can't quite straighten my pinky, but all said and done, it was one hell of an experience. The funny thing is my girlfriend, she asked me, is there any, like, what do you need? She talked to me on the phone and I was just like, I need a new shirt and a burrito. Like, honestly, that right there. And let me tell you something, eating a burrito on morphine is really is amazing. Like, absolutely. An incredible experience.
I would use that as a sign off, but that's already taken. So that leads us to our sign off, and I think it works here. Time travel's a bitch, everyone. See you next week.
Bye.